With a hat tip to Valentine's Day, this show is about a dating app for the smart, busy, and ambitious, as well as life at Stanford GSB and startups. Hello and welcome. Thanks for joining me for this week's Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you can jump up and down and exclaim to the person staring at you, "Yes, I'm in." And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Our guest today is Amanda Bradford, who earned her Bachelor's in Information Systems in 2007 from Carnegie Mellon. After getting her degree, Amanda worked for leading tech companies like Salesforce, Google, and Sequoia Capital. After earning her MBA from Stanford GSB, she founded The League, a dating app with privacy controls and curation. We'll learn more about that as well as life at Stanford GSB. Amanda, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thanks, Linda.
Glad to have you. Now, let's work backward here. I do want to hear more about Stanford GSB, but instead of starting with that, I want to start with The League. What is The League, and how does it differ from other dating apps? What is the problem that it's solving?
So the problem with online dating is that, in general, it's pretty overwhelming. And the problem with offline dating is that it's pretty inefficient. So what we're trying to do at The League is really solve both of those issues by curating a community where we're giving you kind of quality over quantity, 5 matches a day. We make sure that you're not going to see Facebook friends, your LinkedIn connections, your coworkers, and really kind of try to build a community feeling within the dating app so it doesn't feel like this kind of faceless organization that just serves you up profiles. And the idea is really that, you know, each profile, you should spend some time with it, and it's kind of trying to give a little bit of the like class and respect back to online dating that seems to be missing in the last couple years.
Okay. Now, you're going to have to excuse me. I've been married a long time. I'm not in the online dating world. Okay. I'm a grandmother. Why wouldn't somebody want their Facebook friends or their LinkedIn colleagues to know that they're in a dating app? This is probably a very naive question, but why?
Yeah, I mean, dating's a very personal thing, and yeah, you know, the demographic we're targeting. Yeah, the demographic we're targeting is very career focused. You know, they're working towards their next promotion. They're working on, you know, being taken seriously at work, and even kind of playing above the weight class at work. And the last thing you want when you're, you know, kind of building your career is to necessarily kind of have your dating profile floating around the office, or, you know, matching with your boss or something like that. And so I think there's a lot of kind of awkward situations that can happen, especially with the rise of dating apps, that we're really just trying to prevent.
What does curation mean in the context of The League? And I mean, is there a human being attempting to match people up? Is an algorithm? Obviously, the people themselves are not just sifting through the profiles, right?
Right. So we only give you 5 profiles a day. What we mean with curation, you know, there's kind of 2 ways to look at it. One is around the admissions process. So we do require a kind of a full profile. We require photos that show your face. So we do a combination of algorithms plus human review to ensure that the profiles that are accepted into the league are what we consider high quality. Mm-hmm. And then the next step is the matching algorithm, and that's where we decide kind of which 5 profiles to send you that day. And that's completely technology-based, based on stated preferences, based on implied preferences. So that's kind of the step 2. And I think, you know, if you look at the online dating sites, you know, they've been around since the 90s. And one kind of common characteristic is that there tends to be a high number of either fake, spammy, or just very low quality profiles where you can't tell who the person is. The photos are dark. They have sunglasses on. And it tends to really kind of ruin the experience for the users. And so we really wanted to, right from the get-go, make sure that that was not kind of allowed behavior in our community. So we definitely enforce it and, you know, and kick people out if their profiles you know, start to have any of those components.
All right. About how many people are in the league?
So we have over 100,000 registered on the wait list, and we're only live in San Francisco and New York. Right now we've accepted a pretty small percentage just because we were working on building out our kind of V2 platform, but we're hoping to be able to kind of open the gates a little bit wider this year with our new kind of scalable platform.
Okay, and where do you plan to expand? You said New York and San Francisco.
Yeah, so we're there now, kind of the usual suspects. We want to go to LA, we want to go to London, we want to go to DC, Chicago, Boston, you know, basically big cities that millennials are moving after college, where they're working and they have kind of a young urban professional demographic.
Right, right. Okay. Now, you wrote an article on LinkedIn, I guess it was in October, that I don't know if it went, saying it went viral, but it certainly had, it definitely was read a lot, okay? Whether you want to say it went viral or not, we, you know, I'll let you decide that.
Hard to know what that definition is, I know.
Yeah, okay. But whatever you wanted to say viral means, that article was widely read, okay? We can agree on that, right? And yeah. Didn't it have like over 200,000 views or something like that when I looked at it? Is that correct?
Yeah, something around that.
Yeah, right. The article was, "I'm not an elitist, I'm just an alpha female." Can you tell us a little bit about it and why did you write it?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a tough decision. I, you know, had spent almost a full year kind of building the league, and, you know, we got hit with quite a bit of criticism from the press, and I, you know, kind of followed everyone's advice not to respond to critics and to kind of take the higher road and keep working on building a really great product and community and kind of worry about our user base and not necessarily what the press was saying. And then I think, you know, I think at some level, enough was enough. I was seeing, you know, I think I overheard how someone was describing the league to someone who hadn't used the app. And, you know, I got frustrated and I decided that, look, no one's going to necessarily tell my story for me, so let me just tell it and talk about, you know, what my frustrations were dating as a pretty career-focused female single and, you know, and what I'd seen out there dating and kind of the relationship that I personally was looking for and that I think a lot of women and men are also looking for, and just kind of putting my mission statement out there plainly for people to see and you know, either associate with or maybe, you know, not associate with, but I think having a, you know, kind of taking a stand on it versus just sort of hiding behind the media coverage was, you know, a better move for me personally and I think for the business to just be clear on what our kind of mission statement and what our values are.
Right, right. No, it was a very good article, and I assume it was, and overall there were a lot of likes on it too. It wasn't just views. So you did pretty well with that one. Let's go back in time a little bit. Can you give us a little bit more of your story? What made you decide to apply for an MBA and to Stanford GSB?
You know, I think when I joined Google, I had a really amazing female manager. It was probably the first time I had kind of a role model that I looked up to. And as I worked with her and she kind of helped me look at different women in the organization in their career path and see kind of what common trends a lot of them had. And, you know, a lot of the women at Google have gotten their MBA. A lot of them were in really kind of powerful and influential positions at Google. And I think I realized that, you know, it definitely is a signal to your current place of employment and future place of employment that you take your career seriously and that you are, you know, a hard worker and you really want to be successful within an organization when you go get your MBA. And I think it, you know, kind of causes the organization to take you more seriously as an employee. And so I think that part really resonated with me. And, you know, I liked the fact that you build this like very tightly knit community when you go to these programs and, you know, you essentially form like friends and colleagues for life. So I think a lot of that was really exciting to me. And so I decided to go ahead and kind of kick off the application process while I was at Google.
Okay, and why Stanford?
Well, Stanford's known for really breeding entrepreneurs and founders, and, you know, as I thought about what I wanted to do next, I definitely wanted to build something. You know, I wasn't quite sure exactly where I would be inspired or what I would want to do, but I definitely wanted to be, you know, at least joining a startup and helping build something from the ground up. And so I think as I looked at the different programs out there, Stanford, I think, has the highest percentage of students that go on to start companies. I think it's something around like almost 20% of our class attempted to start.
Yeah, I think your class was 18%, which I think was the high watermark.
Right, which is pretty
high. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think it kind of runs in the water, I always say, at Stanford. And it's, you know, even the people that decide not to go and start something, you know, they kind of make plans to do it later in life. And oftentimes many of them do, you know, so it's I think that number just goes up the kind of the longer you track.
Right, right. Okay. Now, when you arrived at Stanford, you already had excellent experience and educational credentials before you even started your MBA. Looking back on the MBA, did you actually learn anything in business school?
I know, I like that question. You know, there's we did a lot of jokes while in business school around what, you know, are we actually learning anything? Yeah. And I think, you know, I think you learn, what I always say about business school is you kind of learn what you should know or be aware of. So it's not necessarily that you become an expert or a master of these said skills, but you learn that, okay, when this situation happens, this is maybe the kind of analysis I should be doing, or this is the kind of modeling, or this is the kind of outreach I should do. And maybe you need to bring someone in to actually help you complete that or execute that. But I think you kind of have the self-awareness and the business acumen to say, okay, I think I should do, for instance, a sensitivity analysis or something like that. And so I think, and it's not necessarily that I could do that right now on the fly, but I think I could, you know, you kind of can figure out how to do these things. And the half the battle is just knowing kind of what tools you need to use. And I think that's what business school gives you, is it kind of gives you a pretty big toolbox. And then you can kind of go and pull in other people or do research or go learn on the fly to put those tools to use.
So are you glad you got, I'm talking about the education again. I'm not talking about the networking or all the ancillary stuff. I'm talking about the meat, the main course, not the dessert. Are you glad you went to business school?
Yeah, I am super satisfied with the education I was given. I think, you know, I learned a lot of soft skills that I didn't really even know I was learning. But, you know, as you are hiring and firing and managing people and trying to motivate employees, I think a lot of the case studies and the role playing we do in class really starts to become relevant. And I start to realize that these classes where you have to, you know, talk to someone who's asking for a raise and tell them why they can't have that raise, it is real life. And so I think those, you know, a lot of the hands-on teaching experiences have been incredibly helpful as I've, you know, I'm a first-time manager, I'm a first-time founder, I've never managed anyone before, so I'm learning a lot on the fly, and I think that experience is pretty invaluable.
Okay, great. What do you miss from your time at Stanford?
I miss not thinking about money and runway. I kind of look at a business school when I was approaching it as like, here's my 2 years to learn, to meet people, to do interesting things that are going to expand my experiences. And now I'm kind of back in the real world and we're, you know, trying to hit milestones before our runway runs out. And it's, you know, kind of back a lot more high pressure. So I miss the kind of miss the more social, relaxed, laid back, vacation period of time where you could actually read a book and really thoroughly enjoy it and just spend time talking to people for hours about their stories. That part was really rewarding.
Okay. Now, kind of mixing the league in Stanford here a little bit. I noticed that the league received $2.1 million in initial funding about a year ago. Did Stanford GSB or your MBA experience or network in any way help you to get that initial round of funding?
Totally. I mean, I think the nice thing about business school is that you basically have kind of 2 years to do as much networking as you want, to do as much education as you want, to do as much reading as you want. So you can really choose how you spend your time. And I did go to a lot of events. I did go to a lot of entrepreneurship talks. I met a bunch of investors that would come in on campus and talk to us. So I think, Stanford makes it very easy to network with venture capitalists. And I even ended up doing an internship one summer in venture. So I felt very kind of confident and that I understood the industry when I was getting out. And a lot of my initial investors were people I had met through the Stanford curriculum or had taught a class at Stanford, and I had kind of created a relationship with them. So yeah, I mean, almost, I would say over half my round was somehow directly related to people I had met like on the Stanford campus.
Great. Do you have other concrete examples of how Stanford GSB helped you launch the league?
I think the network is, really powerful. I was able to get a lot of really great feedback from my classmates. These are some of the smartest people in the United States, if not the world, that are sitting next to you in class. So you can pick their brain really easily. They can give you product feedback, marketing feedback. So I think I was able to lean on my classmates a lot to help me kind of prototype the first version and make sure that I was building a product that both they would use and also, was able to be marketed worldwide, we hope. So I think, really leveraging the fact that you're going, you're sitting next to really smart people in class and getting their advice on a day-to-day basis. Like, you can't underestimate the value that brings, just being around smart people.
Right. Yeah. What do you think people get wrong or simply don't get about Stanford GSB and its program, its community, the whole experience?
I mean, I think business school in general tends to get a little bit of a bad rap around, it's just partying with other MBAs and it's, quote unquote networking, and you travel to distant countries every weekend and that kind of thing. And I think that, while there's definitely a lot of trips and a lot of events and a lot of parties, I think the core piece here is that you are getting an opportunity to meet incredibly hardworking, smart, ambitious people that are likely going to try to do some really interesting things with their life. And so it's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime experience to build an incredibly diverse network and kind of see where that takes you. And I think, I have friends that formed companies together with people they had, sat next to in their section on the first day. And there's all sorts of interesting relationships that have come out of GSB. So I think that, just kind of how powerful the network is. I think, it sounds kind of kitschy, but it is actually really true.
Yeah, but I think the point that you made also is that it's not just about bacchanalian parties, okay? It's the people who are there because they're very, very talented and also usually very hardworking.
Right.
So they may play hard, work hard, party hard, but the work hard is also in there, and that it's not just a for all the time that you have to kind of kick back a little bit and read or think about other aspects of life, if you will. It's also, there's an element of work, and you are creating your own professional reputation in business school. So there's that element too. I'm positive that there are people listening to this podcast who would like to go to Stanford GSB. In fact, they may be listening to this podcast because they want to go to GSB. Now, can you think for a second about your classmates at Stanford? And was there some secret sauce? Was there something that they had in common other than the obvious high grades, test scores, and impressive resumes? Some quality. I'm thinking more qualitatively here than than in terms of this, the standard metrics?
I think just sort of the propensity to take risks, whether it's voicing a controversial opinion in class, whether it's, you know, starting an organization without knowing if, you know, the other classmates are going to attend or be part of it, or just kind of the idea that a lot of these people are really doers. So they just, you know, they don't just talk about things, they actually go in and do it. And sometimes it doesn't work out, but they tried. And so I think that was something that I was just really impressed with, is that, you know, almost everybody who said they were going to try to start a company, you know, did at least try to build something over the summer or form a group with a couple friends at Stanford and kind of go for it. So I think that just that whole mentality of going for it and not kind of sitting around and talking about it, but actually executing.
Right. By the way, I'm many times asked the question I just asked you, and my usual answer, again, not talking about the metrics, is initiative for Stanford GSB.
That's probably a better.
Well, I mean, we're saying the same words in different language.
Yeah.
So anyway, I find it very interesting that basically you've hit on the same quality that I had in a different, you know, same conclusion I've come to in a slightly different way. Now, what do you think? Now we've talked about Stanford GSB. Let's again move out of the Stanford bubble for the moment, okay? What do you think are key qualities or skills that want to be entrepreneurs need to develop and nurture within themselves if they are to succeed as entrepreneurs? And you've been working on the league, what, now 2 years?
Yeah, we're about to be, it'll be 2 years in July, which is crazy.
Yeah. So what would you, I mean, I'm sure you've given this some thought at this point.
Yeah, I think the two words that always come to my mind, the first is hustle and the second is scrappiness. You know, I think saying I don't know how to do something is like the worst thing someone can say to me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you're not a founder then, because, you know, whether it's not knowing how to build a model or not knowing how to do online marketing or not knowing how to coordinate an email campaign or mock something up in Photoshop, I think you need to be able to kind of be comfortable getting thrown in and attempting to do things in kind of all aspects of the business. So
saying, okay, I don't know, I'm going to learn.
Right, and not being afraid or not pointing fingers or saying, oh, I couldn't do this because I couldn't find a marketing person, or I couldn't do this because I couldn't find a tech co-founder. And so I think just being able to kind of get in there and pull your own weight. And then the other one is just sort of grit and hard work and say, okay, it's not going to be easy. You know, I may have to go and literally send out 300 emails to get one investor to talk to me, but I'm going to go do that. And so that's just more of that kind of grit factor.
Right, yeah, okay. That's very good. I think that's true. It certainly determination is major. That's or grit. And I'm kind of smiling here because I know my daughter works for me, and she's worked for me for a long time. And every so often we'll hire somebody, and she just tells them, look, you know, you need to be able to say, okay, I don't know how to do this, but I'm going to learn.
Right.
Because otherwise it's just not a fit. It's not a fit with the culture here. And I think that's, you know, we've already been around a while, so we're not a startup anymore, but we certainly are a small business. And I think it's absolutely mandatory to have that attitude. You know, I'm going to go around obstacles. I'm going to go over obstacles, but I'm not going to really be stopped.
Right.
Okay. Or at least those obstacles that you feel are worth overcoming. Any last bits of advice for Stanford Graduate School of Business applicants and MBA applicants?
I mean, tactical advice is, you know, apply round one, really get started on it as early as possible. So, because, you know, those essays take time and you iterate on them and you decide that, you know, you hate them and rip them up and you start over. So I just give yourself time so you're not super stressed out during the process. I kind of tried to allocate, you know, almost like 4 months to write all my essays, just so I wasn't, you know, just so I wasn't rushed and I could kind of focus on the GMAT and then focus on the essays and really do that soul searching self-reflection that I think is actually really helpful when you're thinking about making such a big investment. So give yourself time to kind of do that self-reflection.
Right. I think you're making also a really good point that the MBA is a major investment, and you it's a big mistake to rush getting in, because you can end up in the wrong place. So we actually have a timeline for MBA applicants, and I'll link to it from our show notes. And the show notes this week will be at accepted.com/139. I'll link to the timeline for 2017 applicants from the show notes at accepted.com/139. Because I think, Amanda, you've raised a really good point that the idea that you can kind of decide to apply in August and then slap together an application, take the GMAT by September, is really a recipe for a mediocre application and rejection from top schools, where mediocrity just is not going to get you in.
Right.
So, Amanda, this has been really great. I want to thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah.
I really appreciate your sharing your time and your experience. Where can people learn more about the league and see if they can join the league?
Yeah, they can join the league at theleague.com, and our handle is at the league.
At the league for Twitter? Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. We'll link to the league, we'll link to at the league, and also to Amanda's article, as well as to the timeline I mentioned, from our show notes at accepted.com/139. Listener, thank you too for tuning in to this, the 139th episode. If you found this show helpful, I have a suggestion for you. Subscribe. That way you won't miss any shows. You can subscribe either through iTunes, Stitcher, Zune, or the podcast player I prefer, which happens to be Overcast. And if you have a question you would like to ask or just want to comment on the show, please do so in a comment at accepted.com/139 or by sending an email to questions@accepted.com. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.